What's poppin', y'all? My name is Phyllis McKenzie, and welcome to Caralife Podcast. If you love the expression of creativity in visual, performing, literary, and culinary arts, then this is the podcast for you. So subscribe and follow our social media pages through the link in the description and be part of the family. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Welcome, everybody, to a brand new week on Caralife Podcast. As you all know, I'm your host, Phyllis McKenzie, and today's guest is joining us all the way from Melbourne, Australia. He is a super articulate and witty Australian master of banter, and despite him having autism, he is a voiceover artist, media personality, and comedian who runs a comedy venue in the second largest comedy festival on the planet, MICF. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce to you Ben Sorensen. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
You have certainly done your research. I'm very impressed.
That's great.
I want to go buy tickets to this guy's show.
I'd love to have a show one day.
You can do all of my writing from here on in. That's great. Well done.
Thank you. So how are you?
Splendid. Look, life, thanks to COVID, was a bit touch and go for a little while, but we're starting to open up here in Australia again, and it's really, really exciting and really wonderful to see people coming back together and getting out and doing stuff and enjoying art and the creative industries and all sorts of great stuff like that.
Yeah, that's amazing, because in my country, people are still in heavy measures because a lot of people here are, let's call them asymptomatic, so you won't know who has COVID. So going out is an ish. So I'm glad that you guys in Australia are also going out. And I'm glad to hear there aren't any forest fires this year.
Well, we've got some at the moment in Perth or Western Australia, but nothing like we did last January. So we are not 50% of the country is not on fire anymore. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing. It was so sad because a lot of wildlife was lost, property also, the nature was destroyed. And that hurts. It hurts the geographic part of Australia because it's half of it is nature, right?
Well, there is a lot of it that is nature. And the really interesting part about it, some of the other work that I do is for an organization called EcoForce Global. And what they do is basically sell trees and promote capturing carbon to reduce our carbon footprint and sequester carbon from the atmosphere. So everyone's cruising along. Everyone's doing really well. Fires happen. So globally, the CO2 levels in the atmosphere went up courtesy of the big fires in Australia. So we've all got so much work to do to not only restore that vegetation, but also capture that carbon as well. And thankfully, organizations like EcoForce Global are doing some great work there.
Yeah, and people should actually listen to my weekend episodes where I talk about nature conservation itself. It's a new thing on Caralife Podcast. Yeah, we are promoting hashtag reverse gentrification. We're not building cities, but this time we are preserving our nature and also our communities.
What a brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. Absolutely brilliant. Should be more of it.
Yeah. And so let's begin today by you telling us your story. Who is Ben Sorensen?
That's a very, do you know what? I've been asked variants of that question so many times. But I think who is Ben Sorensen is the most succinct and stressful way to answer that question. Because I think when we look at the different sides of us and who we are, we look at different facets of our personality, and artistically you go, well, who am I? What does my work stand for? What do I stand for as a human? So beautifully phrased. So I have two parts to my world. One side is the entertainment side, where I do voiceovers and comedy shows and host shows and events and all sorts of stuff all over the place. The other side is working on the business side, the entrepreneurial side, doing marketing strategy and strategy development for a lot of businesses and brands to, you know, help them connect with their audience and to help them obviously increase their sales, but also to be better, more ethical participants within the late-stage capitalist country that we're in.
And speaking of your two sides, the entertainment and the professional business side, I'd like to walk into your entertainment side. You, as an artist, you are a voiceover artist, you're a media personality, you also make people's lives better through your comedy. So is there something you wish you would have known before you began this career path?
Yes, absolutely. Having a large amount of cash fixes a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. So having an ego attachment to money, not very good at all. That's death. It's terrible. But having a lot of money behind you, or a flow of money behind you, in order to solve problems and help people and do things, very useful. Money is a tool for creativity, as opposed to a status symbol or anything else like that. Money buys stuff that you can do. It buys freedom. So, yes, I wish I had it focused on the numbers a little bit earlier and a little bit better. But, you know, I think also the other thing is surrounding ego as well. And I think as a privileged, white, straight man, there is a lot of things in this world that I don't experience, that I don't know. And I wish that someone had have told me earlier that other people experience the world very differently to me. And then I would have started my journey to learn and understand other people's point of view, other people's experiences way earlier on. And I think that helps get rid of ego. And more importantly, that helps a lot of understanding and to break down those barriers between different social groups.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that, as you've mentioned, you wish you would have known numbers in the beginning, and I'm sure that's not the case for you. You never focused on this in the beginning. So you have done great so far, amazingly. So what were the great resources that have helped you along the way?
I think social media. Social media has only been relatively recently, because I'm old. But I think that social media, particularly maybe in the last 8 years, has been really, really important in giving me an insight into the world of other people. And it's, for me, it was a case of curating my own feed so that I could have those connections and that understanding of people that aren't like me, that I could deliberately follow to get a more well-rounded and a more educated and honest view of what the world truly is like. And I think when you consciously do that, you have the ability to create better art. You have the ability to empathize more. You have the ability to not only understand, but also believe that all of this other stuff that you don't see actually happens. So for me, it was social media. And I follow so many really, really interesting and diverse accounts, particularly on Instagram, that when I scroll down, it's an absolute learning curve for me every single time. There's some amazing people out there, and it's really enriching to go and find them.
Yeah, it is, because personally for me, this podcast is actually getting more audiences because of social media. Although I'm a Gen Z podcaster, people might think, oh, a 19-year-old should figure out social media more easily, but that's not the case for me. I practically don't know how to work out things when it comes to social media. I've only started figuring out Twitter currently, and Instagram is just everywhere for me, because you have to know the right accounts, you know, you have to know the right posts, you have to know the right hashtags. If that doesn't happen, it doesn't reflect on your work also. So for you, I can say confidently that you have done such an amazing work on your Instagram, on your TikTok, on your Twitter, and also on your LinkedIn account and Facebook, because a lot of people can get what you do from your social media, which is a plus and a bonus for you.
Well, that's kind of how I tried to do it. And I think a lot of this, even before social media, it was thinking about how do I want people to feel in relation to my personal brand. And as an artist, a lot of artists would go, well, how do I want people to feel when they think about my body of work, my art, or my, you know, connection with my community? How do I want people to feel when they associate that thought, that feeling and that thought with me? And social media is a wonderful way to chip away at that and sort of create that and go, okay, what is my brand? What isn't my brand? And how do I work through that? And how do I make sure that that evolves over time along with my art? Like I do, my voiceovers and audio work has changed drastically over the last 10 years. You know, and so is the live work that I do as well. It's evolved. And one would hope that everybody's art would evolve over time. And that's just a wonderful way to sort of showcase it.
Ben, what drew you into entertainment, especially comedy and voiceover?
Being really, really useless at a lot of other stuff. No, I enjoyed it. And I actually started out doing music. And I realized that musicians work really, really, really hard. Just like visual artists or sculptors, they all work really, really hard at their art. And the end result is only the smallest part of the pie that they get paid for. Everything else, you know, you got to do it because you love it. And you just have to communicate that way, which I admire and I adore. However, not for me. I was never particularly good at any of that. But what I was good at was talking. And I was very good at being witty and a bit of a smarter. So why not make a living out of that? And then the whole voiceover thing sort of happened and, you know, it just sort of grew from taking opportunities and also having a little bit more of a business mind so that I was like, to monetize and take advantage of some of those opportunities to sort of springboard onto the next thing and the next thing and the next thing.
And besides all this, you're also a keynote speaker and consultant in areas of autism and conscious kindness. Could you tell us about this?
Yeah, so there's a lot of organizations out there that one of the big towns, I'll go back a little bit. One of the things that I find, particularly in Australia, and the data says that this is the case in a lot of other countries as well, is we seem to have boardrooms and businesses that provide the majority of their opportunities for able-bodied white men. So if we look at that, we go, there are so many more people out there. There are so many more diverse people out there that can actually build stronger, better businesses. So by going out and doing these keynote conversations that I have, I have autism and I talk about neurologically diverse workforces. However, the principles that I talk about with neurological diversity also apply to gender diversity, racial diversity, and having an acceptance and an awareness of incorporating different people that you wouldn't normally invite in. Because we all want to work with people that are like us, that we get along with, that we have fun with. So the easiest go-to with this, with a unconscious bias, is people that are just like me. So I'm going to hire people that are just like me, which is my unconscious bias, just because I get along with them. But if I consciously step outside of that and go, do you know what? I think I can get along with a lot more people. And then the more diverse your organization is, the better it is. And then the lower your unconscious bias is and the more open you are to new ideas. So there's so many amazing things there. So when I go out there, I talk about employees being given autonomy and the responsibility to be who they are and to work out how they work best and also empower managers to get rid of their ego and to go, how does this group of people in front of me, how do they work best? And I do that all through the label of neurological diversity because that's my lived experience. But again, all of these principles work for really inclusive, really amazing workplaces. And that kind of led me into the conscious kindness thing as well. So what is kindness? And a lot of us tend to think that kindness is a something that flows naturally and it's, you know, all soft people and it's really easy and it just sort of happens. Whereas conscious kindness, I think, is something that it is very difficult and it is a decision that you make in every moment and in every situation. Now, I'm not saying I'm perfect at it. I am far from it. And there are times where I am very unkind, but the concept of it is to practice and to understand the mechanics of it. So in every situation, we have a choice. We can actually do the right thing, or we can do the easy thing, or we can do the wrong thing, which is sometimes the easy thing. Mm-hmm. So conscious kindness says, I will choose to be kind to myself and others. I will choose to be ethical and fair. I will choose to do that. And the more we do that and the more we exercise that, the easier it becomes. But essentially, it is still a choice. So that's what the conscious kindness is, trying to create a more aware and better world one decision at a time.
You know, that actually reminds me a certain quote from my favorite book, Harry Potter. And one of the characters, Professor Dumbledore, actually said that you have to make a choice between what's easy and what's right, because what's easy is often wrong and what's right is often hard. And I think that's what you're actually trying to portray with your talks, right?
Absolutely. And to be fair, I think that accurately, Albus Dumbledore was indeed the best headmaster Hogwarts ever had.
Absolutely. No one could compare. It's surprising. I never thought that you read Harry Potter, because my father actually read it and I was so shocked. I was like, how have you read Harry Potter? And it was like, I grew up with Harry Potter, so I'm surprised that you are reading Harry Potter. Yeah.
So I read it, I watched it, and the only, as a story, I really love it. I do have ethical issues with J.K. Rowling and her anti-trans stuff. I think she should just shut up about that, because Harry Potter is such a wonderful and inclusive story and so lovely. So I'm a huge fan of that, not so much of her personal views, but the that I absolutely adore. And through my work with Supernova, I was fortunate enough to meet some of the people who were in the Harry Potter films.
So, it's always been a dream, actually. A huge dream of mine.
And it's such a joyous experience, and I feel very privileged to be able to work with the team at Supernova. So Supernova is an Australian Comic-Con.
Oh.
And we get lots of people out. There's a team of MCs, of which I am one, and they get out some of the most amazing people from film, and it is just beautiful. And I also get a lot of great authors out as well, and there's just a wonderful, inclusive melting pot of cosplayers and like-minded people that just love pop culture. So, yeah. So we had the girl that played Jenny Weasley out. We had the guy that played Lucius Malfoy out. Mm-hmm. And who else was there? There was a couple of others. But they were all really wonderful, and they all said lovely things about their time on set shooting Harry Potter. So, yeah. I still feel like it only came out yesterday. But the most important question, Phyllis, the most important question of all, what house are you?
I am a Gryffindor, but statistics show that I am actually a Hufflepuff. What statistics show, that I am a Hufflepuff. But I, in blood, I believe that I am a Gryffindor. The Sorting Hat would say so.
Well, Sorting Hat does take, you know, your thoughts into account. I am hands down Ravenclaw, but that's okay. We can still be friends.
Yeah, we can still be friends. It happens. Ben, you also host trivia experiences at the Belgian Beer Cafe on 5th Riverside Quay. And I've watched a few of them on your YouTube channel. People seem very happy with your
meet
and greet. But I can tell that they're happy being there besides being intoxicated. So what are your favorite times, or what's your favorite memory of moments like this?
Do you know what? I really enjoy, because I do a lot of trivia, and I really enjoy trivia because I think knowledge is such a wonderful thing, and trivia is a great way to share knowledge. So every trivia night you do, you walk away with some wonderful nuggets of information that you didn't know before. And even if you get all the questions wrong, you can still go, huh, I didn't know that. And then you can, in the car on the way home, if you're not driving, you can Google it and go, oh, wow, that is true. And look at all this other stuff as well. So I see trivia as a gateway drug to knowledge. And that's what I absolutely love. There's been some really fun trivia questions. Every now and then you just get a great question and you just go, oh, that is so genius. So I'm gonna lay one on you now, and it is it's an international one.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So, which country's previous capital is an anagram of their current capital? So, the previous capital, they mixed up all the letters and made the name of the new capital. And I tell you what, I don't expect you to get it. I think it's really hard.
Okay.
But when you hear the answer at the end, you just go, wow, that makes total sense. So it's one of them. So which country's past capital is an anagram of their current capital? So it is Japan, because Kyoto and Tokyo have the same letters in both, just rearranged.
Wait.
Yes, I know.
I did not think of that.
That's so sneaky, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So exactly what you've gone through right there. So that's exactly what I love about trivia, because you get these great questions, these great, you know, little nuggets, and you go, oh, no idea.
Yeah, I never expected that.
No, so that's at the moment, that is my favorite trivia question of all time.
I think that would be my favorite trivia question.
And when I get a room full of old people, or people who are very straighty 180 and I don't think are really into some stuff, there'll be a question like, what is Dumbledore's favorite flavor of jam?
Hmm, I don't know.
It's raspberry. So there's all these little things that you'll find in the book. So it's raspberry jam. And he's got a tattoo as well on him. And it is of Paris.
These things you really have to think about it.
Yeah, you do. I'm paranoid now because I haven't done those previews in a little while. Nope, got it right. That's nice.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
So happy. No, I just don't want to give you wrong information. So there you go. Absolutely amazing. So there's heaps of great questions and stuff like that. And from watching Harry Potter and from watching, a lot of the series, I have no idea about any of these questions or any of these answers, because I just go, yeah, I just really enjoy it. But then when I go through and I watch the movies, or I watch this, or I read the books with the idea of right questions, then I pick up a whole different array of knowledge from it. And when I do the shows and I share that with people, they'll go, hang on, I didn't see any of that. So they'll go and rewatch or reread, and then they get even more out of that as well. And I think that's the most joyous thing. That's how art keeps on giving, is when you can get those layers and layers and layers of depth out of what the artist or creative wanted you to see and wanted you to understand. That's the most joyous thing about art.
Mm-hmm. Art is expressive. It's part of us, and it's the only thing that won't die on this planet, because it keeps being reborn each and every day. Something new comes up. And I'd really love to be on on your trivias one day just to watch you perform. And for those who would like to see him, find him at the Belgian Beer Cafe, 5th Riverside Quay in Australia. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And all of the tickets, shows, dates, and some of the Zoom shows that I'm doing as well, or video shows that I'm doing, you can check it all out at bensorensen1.com because someone else took Ben Sorensen.
It happens.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it does. And speaking of experiences, have you ever had a failure with one of your comedy acts, or maybe you've tried to create this voiceover and it just didn't work out?
Yes, Ashy, my favorite failure. So when we talk about failures, there's so much that you can learn from a failure. And that's why if you're not failing somewhere in your life, you're not pushing hard enough. You're not, you know, trying enough new things. And thankfully, all of my failures, and I've had some relatively large ones, have been great learning experiences for me. But my favorite failure, I flew from Australia, little Australia, all the way to America. And I was a guest of CMA, I think it was, at the time, the Country Music Association. And I had a radio show that was quite popular doing country music. And they said, oh, look, come on over, and do you want to host this show? And I went, yeah, while you're over here. And I went, yeah, it's fine. I'll be a guest host. That's fine. And I turned up, and it was in, I still remember it, it was a place called the Second Fiddle, a very famous little bar on Broadway in Nashville, off the main street, really beautiful. Lovely people, great ambience, nice beer, everything was perfect. So they had a big tour bus out the front, and I got myself ready, and they went, oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to be video streaming this to 3 countries, but no pressure, it's fine. Just go out, do your thing, it's fine. And I went out there, little Australian me, and I did the whole show, not one laugh from the entire American audience, not one laugh at all. And I went, oh, geez, I reckon I'm so funny in Australia. What's going on? And New Zealand, they think I'm pretty funny. So anyway, so I did the show, and I had no concept that the American sense of humor was so different, and that my accent at the time was so thick and so strong for the Americans that they were struggling to understand, let alone laugh. But the one good thing that came out of that, there was a large group at the back of the room of Pommy backpackers, or UK backpackers, and they loved the show. They thought it was great. They got my humour. But a lot of the Americans did. So, yes, that's when I died in a most spectacular fashion.
I understand, because I'm not saying it's an American thing, but Americans seem to love accents, especially when it comes to British and Australian people and Russians also. So if you try to make a joke and you have an accent, they'll be mesmerized by your sound and forget that you were telling a joke at that moment. Or they spend a lot of time trying to process whatever you're saying and repeating it inside their head. So they just seem to forget that, oh, I'm in a comedy show. I'm supposed to pay attention and listen to the joke.
And I don't think they're as good with subtle humor. So I think, Australians and British humor and humor in a lot of other areas as well has some nuance and subtlety to it. And I don't think a lot of the Americans are really big on that from what I've found. But you know what? Since then, I've overcome my fear of doing American shows, and I've done a couple of videos and a couple of podcasts and a couple of shows for the States, and they've gone over pretty well. So learning curve from that massive failure. But even so, I've got a great story to tell, and it was a lot of fun.
That's amazing. And Ben, we all need influence in our life. Positive influence, definitely. So who are the 3 most influential people to you?
I like, do you know what? I think a very good question. I find science generally and respected scientists a really positive influence in my life. They keep amazing me with stuff that they're studying and that's coming out. So it's not a person as such, but it's more so a type of person, and it's those scientific minds that just really inspire me with, you know, things that had never been thought of before, or technology that's never been done. So I really, really enjoy and am inspired constantly by those clever scientific people. I also, he's passed away now, but I am a huge, huge fan of Anthony Bourdain. He had a TV series called No Reservations, and I think he was just such a wonderful free soul and free spirit, and he had such an interesting journey in life. I find a lot of inspiration and motivation from his work and his journey in finding himself, and also his passion for food and cooking and life, and how he relates his passion back to life in a connectable way. And I thought that was really amazing. And we need a third person now. You know, I think music is such a wonderful healing tool. And I think that when you cruise around or you travel around the world and you just end up at a little bar somewhere and have a serendipitous moment where you're totally engrossed and totally focused on the live music that is happening in front of you. And I think that as opposed to being a person, this is like a time or a concept. I think being totally immersed in musical art is one of the most inspirational things. Music is such a powerful medium to heal, to inspire, to do all sorts of things. And live music, I think, is really stunning. And some of the best live performances that have come at exactly the right time have been so random and so needed. You just walk into a bar and all of a sudden, boom, there's this artist there that is just singing something that is just so perfect for your life in a way that just speaks to you. And I go, that's the magic of art. And that's the magic of the world and universe in which we live.
I can actually agree with you on that, because to me personally, people might find this Cornish or maybe a girl thing, but I also don't have influential people. I can't choose who is an influence to me, but when it comes to general groups of things, one that has always been inspiration to me, like I mentioned to you earlier, is nature. I love nature. I love the fact that it's so fascinating that it doesn't have life, like it doesn't have a heartbeat, but a plant or maybe a forest, you can see thriving, you can see it nourishing. And this growth when it comes to nature is something that I love. The second thing is science, like you mentioned. I'm fascinated about science. I'm that kind of person who logs on NASA and just stays there for an hour watching a video on space. No sound, no nothing, just a camera floating. I love the sense of science, the sense of surprise that science can give you, and that amazement that you get after you realize a certain fact that you never knew. And the third thing that's greater than all of the three is actually art itself. Because like you said, art is very magical. If you get to understand art itself, it's very magical. Let's say food, for example, you can actually taste the creativity itself. When somebody makes a chocolate cake and you taste a different chocolate cake, they never taste the same. You'll find that, quote unquote, one has love in it. You'll find that some food was just made for the sake of making. You'll find that music has emotion in it. You'll find that paintings, you can actually feel the emotions from the painting strokes that were there. Or even from literature itself, you can feel whatever this person was feeling. And the ability for me as a person to channel my emotions into art, it's very inspiration to me. It's a huge inspiration to me.
I totally agree. And And when we look at things like Maslow's hierarchy of needs and we see that art is kind of further up, I think you get to a stage where you need art in a complex society in order to help you get what is below art. Because art is the expression of that passion, that anger, that repression, that freedom that helps you to process all of those essential human emotions so that you can clearly think and worry about food, shelter, employment, all of that other stuff. So I feel like, although Maslow's hierarchy is very useful, I think art and creative stuff should probably be a little more important, but kind of in conjunction with a lot of others. But I think that happens. And I think that the beautiful thing about the human race is that we constantly evolve and we constantly understand more about the world in which we live and how we play with it and how we use it and how we express it. Like, even if we look at the emergence of digital or video art, you know, that didn't exist 20 years ago. And now we've got that, just like film and TV or photos didn't exist at one point in time, but we have that now. And each time, as you said before, art gets reinvented and it becomes fresh and it speaks for a period of time and it speaks to a group of individuals. And the fun part about art is going out into the wealth of it and finding what speaks to you. And then understanding that. And then the next challenge, I think, with art is finding things that don't speak to you and understand that. But it's
absolutely
beautiful. Love it.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. And Ben, how has this journey in the artistic way shaped you in who you are today?
I think I spent a lot of time in my life fighting my creativity and going, no, no, no. You want to be successful, you don't want to be creative, thinking that it was an either or. And I think art has so constantly chipped away at my psyche and who I am and what I do that it's altered how I feel about the world. It's altered where I feel my place is in the world. And I think that's been the most defining thing with creativity and art is just accepting that I am a creative individual and I really, really do love it and enjoy it. And that by accepting that, it's helped me to find out who I am and to find my place in life and to find a lot of soothing things to help me deal with or cope with the complex world in which we live. So,
and
yes,
you should be proud. Yeah, you should be proud of your creativity because Albert Einstein said creativity is intelligence having fun. And that's our, like, let's call it a motto for our podcast. We embrace our creativity. In art, you need to embrace it.
So I think the other great thing that Einstein said, which I think relates to creativity, is he said great people know their greatness before anyone else. And most creatives know. And they can feel that creativity within them and they can feel that burning desire to communicate things in, you know, whatever way is natural or best for them. And I think that's also a magic part of it. The intelligence and the passion is just brilliant.
Yeah. In regards to this, what advice would you give anybody out there who wants to pursue a career in art, any form of art?
I think it's about getting, not discounting the importance of personal development and personal awareness. And I think your art will grow and the success of your art will happen through knowledge of yourself and awareness of yourself. And having that really internal journey is really helpful because I think if we look at comedians, for example, they're a delightful bunch of inherently broken people, but beautifully broken. And I think if we connect with how we feel and we know who we are and we consciously look after our own mental health, then I think we can have a beautiful and supportive artistic community filled with an array of people that gain not only support, motivation and inspiration from their art, but also from each other. So I think if you're a creative starting out, learn about yourself, understand yourself. And, you know, be aware of your own mental health and be aware of your own situation and use that to hone your art, to engage not only with your artistic and creative skills, but also with the artistic and creative skills of other people.
And I think to add on that, what people need to understand is that success, especially when it comes to art itself, takes time. It takes a lot of time. You'll find that, let's say, a painter will have dozens of paintings but never sells one, and after 50 years, that's when they have a success. Or we can even take an artist, a musical artist like Lil Nas himself. Old Town Road was his hit. But some people don't know that before Old Town Road, he had 13 other songs which people had never heard of. But he had already released them, and they were never a hit or anything. Then Old Town Road, years on, became a hit. So it takes time. It's not like you become a doctor, you graduate, you finish your med school, get in there, and then start having a paycheck. Or you become a teacher, the same thing. But when it comes to art, it will take time for you to see your first paycheck that you would actually be proud of. And that's something that just people have to embrace, that it will take time. You just don't have to give up.
Absolutely. And it's also, I think, how do we define success? So when you go to university, you define success as getting a degree at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And then how do you define success in life as getting a job and working for someone else? Where I think with the arts, I think success is very personal. Success in art is, have I said what I want to say? Have I communicated my idea in a way that others can understand and in a way that I feel good about? You know, and I think success isn't as traditional, and the pathway to success isn't linear with creative people and creative industries sometimes. So... you know, I think that's a really good point that you make, and a really interesting point as well. That, you know, it's not like you can finish your degree, get a job, and then you'll do 9 to 5 art every day. Mm-hmm. It's sort of more involved than that. But that the joy of that as well is that art is a all-consuming life passion, as opposed to working in a factory or driving a truck or something else. That can be done as a job, whereas I think art, it's very hard to do it like a job. It's something that is with you all the time.
That's great. Ben, if you are in Bill Gates' shoes right now, like you are the richest man on the planet, money was never an option to you, what would you do every single day of your life?
I'd probably still do what I'm doing, really. That's so boring. That's such a boring answer. Do you know what? I think I would go on tour more. And I would, if I had unlimited money, I would actually travel. I would probably travel the world and produce TV series and documentary after documentary after documentary on interesting people, interesting stories, and interesting experiences all throughout the world. Because I think there are so many amazing things out there, and I just love the opportunity to experience them and share them with other people.
And that's great that you're a people's person. Despite you suffering from autism, you embrace other people in your life. And having to hear an answer like that, that you'd go on tour and meet more new lives, meet new souls, change more lives, make people happy, that would be an amazing thing to do.
Well, I think interacting with all those different people makes me a better person as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's having all sorts of different experiences makes you a better human, I think. And travel, I've learned, really does round out a person's personality better. Mm-hmm. And it provides them with different experiences and different problem-solving skills, and you've got a wider base to sort of compare things with. And I think that that's healthy, and I think that's a good thing. And if I had unlimited money, I'd probably do more of that. And I'd also drink a lot more coffee.
Coffee, people. Woo!
Yeah.
Caffeine's great for the body sometimes. You get to think, your thoughts are like in a straight line after that one cup of hot brewing coffee. And I hear that Melbourne has amazing coffee shops.
Yeah, we do. We're still trying to get rid of Starbucks, but everything else is pretty good here.
Original coffee.
We have like two streams of coffee in Melbourne. There's sort of two, maybe three streams of coffee. So we have rubbish coffee, which is stuff you get the servo and you pay like 80 cents or a dollar for a cup. Mm. And it's got UHT milk in it. And it's like, then we've got the... middle of the road, creamy, medium roast. I call it Australian coffee. Mm-hmm. And then we have the darker, like espresso Italian style coffee as well. So, when you go around to the different coffee shops in Melbourne, it's great to note whether it's the, strong Italian style that they're going for or the sort of the creamy, nutty, rich, sweet Australian medium roast. So it's really fascinating. And if you ever come to Australia,
mm-hmm. and you ever shop straight ahead.
And ever come to Melbourne, I will take you on a coffee shop crawl, like a pub crawl, except it's a coffee shop crawl.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to a few of my favourite cafes in Brunswick, and we have a little piccolo at each one, and then we don't sleep for a week.
Absolutely. Then what is your vision for your life and maybe for your career 10 years from now?
Do you know what? I was talking to my therapist about this the other day, and actually, no, I wasn't. But the concept of what's next, I think it's really interesting because we look at, what's happening this week or this month or this year. But then to sort of take some time out and look and go, well, what do I want? What do I want next? You know, I think for me, my focus at the moment is getting through and surviving Comedy Festival, which is 4 weeks of shows. And I'm very, very excited about that. And that's a really big positive thing for me that's been a couple of years in the making. So I'm very excited to see the fruition of that vision. I'm also excited to rebuild my life and my creative life post-COVID. Yeah. And I think that a lot of the plans that we had before have altered a little bit courtesy of COVID. And we do events here in Australia. We particularly do events differently now to what we did before. And it's refinding your niche in that space. So there's a lot of research and development and a lot of trying new things to see what works. So I think in the future it's to perfect live events, make sure that they're still thriving in a post-COVID world, and also to focus on a lot of the video shows that we do and the passive income from art and creating more of that. So, yeah, I think that's going to be something that's going to be quite big in the next few years. So that's what I'll be focusing on.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe you'd have that documentary you were talking about or a TV show, the Ben Sorensen TV show.
I would love that, and I would be very, very happy to do that. But, you know, there's a few things we need to do before that, and I'm working on it.
Yeah, and I'd like to ask you something. If you were to go back in time, let's say a time machine opened up, and what advice would you give young Ben?
I would give him, apart from the lotto numbers, and possibly some really good stock tips, and a couple of winning horses for the Melbourne Cup. I would probably tell him to stress less, and that, I think the advice that I would want to give may not be the advice that I would want to hear. So I think I would go back and say, don't worry, dude, like everything's going to be okay. And now, having lived through everything, I'd go, that's a really good piece of advice. But me at the time would go, that's useless. What's that going to do for me? So I don't actually know what advice I probably would have actually listened to and actually taken then. I probably would have grown my beard a bit earlier. And... you know what? That's probably a good thing. I'd probably say, grow your beard earlier and, probably focus on, don't stress so much, look after yourself and it'll all be okay and get rid of ego. I think they're the really big things. And you know what? Every single one of those, pieces of advice actually still apply to me today. I still need to, get rid of my ego or get out of my ego and focus on real stuff that makes a difference. I still need to look after myself and, you know, I still need to know that everything's going to be okay.
That's great advice. even though it applies to both young Ben and older Ben right now. It's amazing advice. And as we wrap up...
I thought you said older Ben, not old Ben. I like
no,
that.
No, older. Age is a number, so we are older, but not old. Because even 7 years to a four-year-old is old.
It's all relative, isn't it? There's a piece of research online. I don't know if it's research or just a really clever article, saying that one hour of time to a child feels like an eternity. Mm-hmm. But to someone who is 70, goes like that. And mm-hmm. they were talking about the concept that time is a relative thing. And so quantum physics talks about time. Physics talks about time a bit. And they were saying that time, an hour feels longer to a child simply because it is a larger proportion of their life compared to the 70-year-old. So, you know, I think that's a really interesting concept with time and when we worry about, you know, how quickly we're moving and what we're doing and everything like that. So, yes, time is a tricksy thing.
Yeah, it is. And I even wonder who came up with time, actually. As they were coming up with time, how did they know that right now it's 1 o'clock or right now it's 12 o'clock? Maybe we're living in a different time and we don't know.
Well, do you know what? I think that's interesting because that's the same thing with our calendar as well, because time, we have smaller units of time, which is like minutes, seconds, hours. And then we have sort of larger units, which are like days, weeks, months, years. And we saw there's, you know, we operate on, there's a couple of different calendars out there. And originally we ended up just using the moon to work with the lunar calendar, because that's an easy way to go, oh, look, full moon, yep, okay, cool. That's the marking of time. And then we had a pope that was a really good salesman. And we swapped to the Gregorian calendar, which was a little bit weird because, you know, there's a couple of months that didn't really work out. So we added them in. And then, you know, we've got February, which is a weird length of time. So it was all made up. So you're right. How did we come up with this system? There's almost a documentary in that.
Mm-hmm. And as we wrap up, Ben, I'd like to ask you a question that I'd like you to give an answer based on your thought. What is the meaning of art to you?
I think art is a way of preserving and sharing the honesty of the human condition. And from sharing the honesty of the human condition, we evolve as an artist and someone appreciating the art. So in that sense, I think art is such a wonderful gift. And that is what art is to me, is an honesty of the human condition.
Yeah, that's an amazing and unique answer, because we all have our own definition of art based on ourselves. Some people to art, it's a form of living. Some people to art, it's a form of giving. And to some people, art is a form of speaking out to other people without actually using words. Or if you're using words, without actually using your gestures or your physical appearance, because that's the true meaning of art. You need to understand whatever this person is giving in order to feel whatever they're feeling.
Absolutely.
But thank you so much for joining us on this episode on Care Alive. We're so glad that you are here.
Well, I'm glad that you invited me, Phyllis. You're an absolutely amazing human with such knowledge and such a sparkle and personality. It's just wonderful. It's like all the answers and stories just want to flow naturally out of me. You've just done a magnificent job.
Thank you so much. You're also an amazing guest, an amazing person, and very interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and to those listening, if you'd love to meet Ben Sorazin, he's very eccentric, he's a music lover, a writer, and you can just tell how amazing he is from this episode. Please buy tickets to meet him at the Belgian Beer Cafe, 5th Riverside Quay on South Bank Vic 3006 Australia. Tickets are on his website, bensorazin1.com, because you need to RSVP. Right?
You do.
Yeah, you do. And I'd love for all of you to go listen to him. If you can't make it there and you live in a different state, just watch his YouTube channel. I'm pretty sure he'll upload episodes from there. But don't worry, links will be in the description. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Everything is Ben Sorensen 1, all over social media, my website, everything. Ben Sorensen 1 for everything, and you can't go wrong. I'm pretty easy to find.
Mm-hmm. That's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok. And he also has a YouTube channel, Ben Sorensen. Links will be in the description once again. So thank you. Thank you so much, Ben.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. And I hope you have an amazing rest of the
night. I will. I think it's espresso martini time.
And that will be it for this week. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you're notified when a new episode is posted. Rate and review this podcast on your favorite podcasting app, especially Apple Podcasts, and share it with all your friends. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, creativity is intelligence having fun. Until next time, hashtag PodRock.